You're listening to Humanitarian Radio with your hosts, Tony St. Tone and Janie Beauclair.
Good afternoon and welcome to this edition of Humanitarian Radio. I am Janie Beauclair.
And I'm Tony St. Tone.
And hey, we're welcoming our friends and our family. And if you are a first-time listener to our show, we're happy to have you. We are a feel-good show shouting out some good news from around the world. And you can expect some great positive music by St. Tone, as well as some great innovative guests every week. And see what's going on around the USA with our events calendar.
So today's guest is Mona Tubulin from the MST Group. She is all about human and organizational peak performance. She takes from the traditional side of medicine and science, and she brings in the spiritual side, and it's just really fascinating to hear what she can offer her clients.
We saw her speak recently, and her demonstration was so dynamic that we said, please, please, please come on our show. Yes, we want you on now. She's really an amazing person, and we really look forward to sharing her with you guys. So it is a brand new year, and welcome to 2016. Tony, you have been busy looking up resolutions, and you've come up with a list for us.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the top five so we don't go into this long, drawn-out thing. But number five is enjoy life more, which I can totally appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, which I didn't realize this is still up there, but quit smoking. So there's still a lot of people out there smoking, and I didn't realize that either. Number three is pretty obvious. It is tame the bulge or lose weight. I know that is probably a really high priority for people. And number two is fit in fitness. So just getting back into shape. Some people just feel like they don't have to lose weight, but they want to feel like they're young again.
Fit.
Yes. And number one, which I thought was really great, was spend more time with family and friends.
You know, I love that one particularly. And there's something that you, Tony, and your family do. A couple of traditions that you guys have that are so amazing, and that if people could bring these thoughts back into their family dynamic, what a change it would be, really, in how families treat each other and live with each other.
Well, it's really cool. About maybe 4 or 5 years ago, my brother, who is the oldest of all my cousins on my father's side, said, you know, it's really interesting. We only get together once a year at Christmas, and we barely do that. Why aren't we getting together more often? And, you know, everyone is married now and has their own kids, and it's just like we grew up together.
A life. They have life.
They have lives. So what they did is they started, it's called the Cousins Dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's probably about 10 of us that all get together, and we go out to dinner.
It's a quarterly event.
Yeah. So it's really funny. Even though I live out here in California, when I do fly back, they actually arrange it so I can be part of the Cousins Dinner every time.
Right.
But it's really nice just to see everyone get together. And also they'll Skype me in sometimes. So call me and go, hey, Tone, what's going on? And
just so that you can be in there.
Exactly.
Totally. It's very, very cool that they do that. And some of these cousins drive from a ways. I mean, they're not all living in the same neighborhood here.
No, they're not. And I think that's what it is. So they're forcing each other just to connect.
To stay in touch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's beautiful. And it beats the heck out of texting. When you're sitting there for a few hours getting to hear what's going on in each other's lives, I mean, that brings happiness into you. What I was looking at in Forbes magazine here is they're saying only 8% of people will, in fact, succeed at their resolutions. So the problem with that is a lot of people out there, 92% of the people, will not get their wish. What Forbes is saying is make it simple and you'll achieve it. Don't make this big elaborate list. Don't go for the extreme makeover. You want to lose 5 pounds this year. Make it simple and you'll do it.
Set the bar low and you'll hit it.
Every time.
There you go. Perfect. Well, when you hear that sound, you know it is time for our quote of the week.
May your eyes, mind, and heart be filled with true spirit of starting a new year that gives you a fresh dimension to your new life. I'm going to say that one more time. May your eyes, mind, and heart be filled with true spirit of starting a new year that gives a fresh dimension to your new life. So what I'm feeling from this one is when your eyes, your mind, and your heart are all involved in what you're choosing to do, you can start your new life every year. You can have a brand new life.
Yeah.
Every year for yourself. So may your eyes, mind, and heart be filled with the spirit of starting a new year that gives you fresh dimension to your new life.
It's really interesting, too, because I know that we use New Year's Eve as a symbol.
Marker, yes. Yeah,
to start something new. But you can start something new in July. You could start something new in August.
Well, it's nice that people have something that jerks them into starting something new at some point in their life period.
That's true. I mean, it is true that at least in this society that we've evolved into, we use New Year's as a beginning, as something to start a new project or to look back at what we've done.
Yeah.
And so there are these measuring points. Because if not, there's probably some cultures out there that just evolve and go.
Yeah, they're changing things every day. No big deal.
Yeah.
USALuxuryDirect.com. Luxury goods to your doorstep. Get name brands like Waterford Crystal, Kate Spade, Swarovski Crystal. A variety of luxury items straight to your doorstep. Get ready for the holiday season. Go to USALuxuryDirect.com. So we want to thank our sponsor, USA Luxury Direct. As you know, this show is run strictly on donations, and we appreciate them supporting our cause and helping us shout out some good news around the world. If you have a chance, go check out USALuxuryDirect.com and put in the code word humanitarian radio, and they'll give you an extra discount. Do you have a great idea for a product and you don't know how to get it made? Call Artistic Journey. They'll help you find your way to getting your new products made and into the marketplace. Need a free consultation? No problem. Need artwork and graphics? No problem. Need your idea turned into something wonderful that the whole world can use? Call Janie at Artistic Journey to help you get through this process. It's not as hard as you think. 20 years of experience, Artistic Journey can pave the way for your product to get into the hands of people around the world. Call Artistic Journey today, 941-780-2538.
So it's time for some good news from around the world.
And my favorite segment of the hour, because we have the pleasure of sharing the most amazing things people are doing all around the world. Today's story comes from Germany. What has Germany done now? Isn't Germany where the Autobahn runs through?
Yes.
Okay, so these guys have been forward thinkers in the world of traveling for quite some time. What they have done is opened a 62-mile bicycle highway, completely free of cars, no trucks, nothing motorized, no scooters, no motorcycles, nothing but bicycles. Why did they do this, you might ask? Well, they've decided that they can connect 4 universities and 10 Western cities by making a 62-mile highway for bicycles. This will take 50,000 cars off the road each day.
That's amazing.
Each day.
That is really amazing.
50,000 cars. Think about that.
Right. And the fact that they thought of this and said, hey, let's just build this. And you know, they've done stuff like that. I want to say there is, in Connecticut, there was a canal run that runs the... It's the old train tracks. What they used to do is they used to run logs down this canal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably a good maybe 30 miles. And they've put a bike trail alongside of it. But it was up to each town.
Their portion of it. Yeah. Sarasota, Florida did something like that too.
But I think it's really interesting to see, like, you know, who will actually use that and see how effective that is, because it's a great idea.
Like traditional highways, this path has a passing lane, goes overpasses and underpasses and crossroads, and there's even streetlights, so it doesn't matter what time of day or night. But what they're trying to do is encourage people to put their cars in the garage and use their bicycle and save in a million different ways. First of all, they're going to improve their health. Second, they're going to not have so much gas and emissions in the air. And third, they're going to see a different perspective every day and night. So they're saying that they're the quality of their ride to work and their ride home is going to be tremendous. Okay, so the city of Austin, Texas did something really cool. They took on a challenge to find housing for 250 homeless veterans. And what did they do? They joined with the Texas Association of Realtors, a bunch of landlords and apartment associations, and they were able to put together housing for all of these 250 veterans that would cost them an average of $350 to $900 a month. This is a rate that these guys can afford to do, and now they're living in houses. 250 homeless veterans.
That just proves that it's possible to make changes out there. Awesome.
I'm living here in a state of abundance. I'm counting blessings that I never saw before. Because I'm the ruler of this kingdom I call me.
Positive affirmations wrapped in pop rock songs.
Give me that best case scenario.
It's motivational musician Saint Tone.
Glass stereo.
Check out his latest live show, The Rise Up Experience, at www.sainttone.com.
Mama said we can always hug it out.
Pick up his latest CD, Outside the Box, available on iTunes. For music with a positive message, check out sainttone.com.
Here are some events that may be happening in your area. Check out events calendar on humanitarianradio.com. January 14th to the 17th, Women's Healing Retreat, Ojai, California. January 22nd to the 24th, Recreate Yourself in Nevada City, California. January 28th is the Healing Water Spa Tour in Desert Springs, California. In February, we have a yoga and snowshoe retreat in Lenox, Massachusetts. Healing the Heart, February 5th to the 7th in Carlsbad, California. February 15th to the 20th is the Wellness and Spiritual Retreat in India. If you're looking for something to do and you want to plan ahead to a vacation, we have events all the way through May of 2016 on our events calendar. So feel free to join us. And if you know of something we should be posting, please let us know on humanitarianradio.com.
It's time for our positive song of the week. And the song that I chose today is a song called Brand New Day, which was the title track of one of my CDs. And it being a brand new year, 2016, it is a brand new year, it is a brand new day. This is Saint Tone, check it out.
Well, it felt like Christmas morning, having arrived in July. Woke me up with excitement. My shoulders felt so light. It's a brand new morning, brand new day, got new life. Said it's a brand new morning. We'll be right back.
Once again, that is Brand New Day by Saint Tone. If you want to hear other positive music, be sure to check out sainttone.com. That's www.saintone.com. And so we're back with Mona Tubian from the MST Group. How are you today, Mona?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much, Tony. Good to be here.
Yes, you know, we got to meet you at the Higher Experience meeting where you were actually doing a presentation, and my wife and I, Janie, who is not here today right now with me, but she was commenting back and forth, and we were saying how we definitely needed you on the air because everything that you were talking about at that meeting was very fascinating. So you do quite a bit. I mean, you do life coaching, energy healing, goal achievement. I mean, there's a list of things you do, but also you have studied around the world. So I definitely want to just find out, how did you get involved in all this and how did you end up where you are today?
Okay. Great question. I think everybody is born with certain intuitive gifts, and through the process of kind of growing up and Western societal, you know, fitting in, the whole fitting in motion, we develop, you know, various masks that push us away from our own intuitive capacities and capabilities. And somehow I was not pushed out of that. What ended up happening with me is that I held very strongly to my intuitive gifts and grew those, but sort of behind closed doors, in a secret sort of fashion. So most people would relate to their internal persona and their external persona, which is like the mask they wear for the world versus the person they really identify with, who they truly are inside. And for me, that spiritual, intuitive person was always the person inside that I could only nurture or grow when I felt like I was away, away from, you know, my world, so away from the place that I wore the mask. So I grew these dual personas, one, the, you know, high-performing achiever who, you know, accumulated a whole array of various degrees from great institutions, and, you know, I have my MBA, I have a master's in clinical psychology, I have a PhD, I have two undergraduate degrees, you know, that sort of overachieving person who's making up for the lack of integration between the inner and outer persona. Mm-hmm. And then there was the inner persona who was, you know, that spiritual being who's got those intuitive gifts, who was the sacred, my sacred place. And so that's what took me on all my travels. I would find various people who I would hear about or read and, you know, about their books or whatnot. And then I would seek them out in the world, whether it was Thailand, China, you know, Nepal, you name it, Israel, the Middle East, North Africa, South Africa, and I would go to their place of learning or the monastery that they were at, wherever it was, and I'd kind of lure them out of their, you know, their caves where they were meditating, you know, for years, and I would have them teach me. I would you know, study with them, and so it became this thing where I ended up spending, you know, a good 20 years of my life doing this kind of intensive traveling on my own and studying with various gurus and masters from around the world. And it really culminated in these two personas, the outer and the inner, culminated in coming together and integrating about 6-7 years ago, where when I was chosen to be given Peruvian shamanic rites, mm-hmm. on top of the degrees I had. And so I was able to hone all of that and integrate it and utilize all of those great things in my private practice.
Let me ask you real quick. Now, when you were doing all these different studies, those are more spiritual studies that you were doing around the world, or did they have to do with more of the degrees that you had accumulated?
No, my degrees are very grounded, you know, degrees from, you know, Georgetown University, Pepperdine University, you know, UC Berkeley. These were the schools that I went to. I spent some time at Oxford. It was very traditional institutional learning, which really, really helped me ground the spiritual sort of studies that I was doing with the masters while I was traveling. So the two kind of came together in this very unique way to form the kind of practice that I have, which I call it soul work. It's this combination of the therapeutic, the traditional grounded therapeutic work that I've, you know, spent many, many, many years studying in traditional universities, you know, of higher education, with the spiritual stuff that I've learned through studying with these various masters from around the world.
See, now, and that's what I find so fascinating, because usually, I would just say, in general, people are either very grounded, very practical, and then there's other people who are very spiritual. And it's very hard or very uncommon to find someone who has both. Mm-hmm. And it seems like you are very grounded, so you really understand the practical aspects of it. Like, these are the studies, these are the tests that have been done. And then you come in with the spiritual side and go, I don't care about tests. This is what I'm feeling. This is what my gut is telling me. So mm-hmm. I think it's really, really fascinating to find someone like yourself who has done studying for the past 20 years and has both achieved high success on both ends. Like, you've been able to study with some high-end spiritual teachers, and yet you've gone to some really incredible schools to get your degrees. When you have a client come to you, do you initially just go, what is my gut telling me? Or do you read a chart and say, hey, this is what his ailments are, and the book says to do this? I'm always curious, like, you know, which way do you approach it, and does it vary?
It's a great question, Tony, because most people do one or the other of those things. I mean, that's the logical way that most people approach, a new client coming in.
Sure.
And, you know, the way that I would answer that question is, you know, maybe really simplistic, but honestly, I listen. I just really, really, I'm extremely present, and I completely listen to what the person who's come in is telling me. And I kind of allow them to guide me to begin with, because people generally have an idea of where they're at, even though they pose it in a question format when they come in. They feel lost or confused or depressed or anxious, or like they're underachieving and they want to be doing more with their lives. I mean, these are the general categories of things that people are feeling when they seek, guidance. And when they come in, though, it's very interesting, because when they sense that there is somebody extremely present and really listening with all of their being, they then tune into a part of themselves that then speaks, answers their own questions in terms of what they're looking, what kind of guidance they're looking for. So when I hear them get to that point where they begin to recognize that they are actually being heard, they actually matter, they are in a place where, someone is just consciously, truly putting time and effort into hearing what they have to say, they then connect with their higher self, and they know which path they need to take. Some people say that they are not ready to sort of delve into the spiritual stuff. They don't know what that entails. They know that it may be missing in their life, but I have a lot of, especially men come in who are just, they want something practical. They want to feel like they're getting a utilitarian response to, the session that they're paying for. And so we'll start there. And just and it's interesting, because it's the work is really transformational. It's people move at lightning speed when they sort of commit to doing the soul work. And something happens, something beyond the realms of me, for sure, happens that really speeds up their evolution in a way where they then gently prod me to move them into the next, the next thing that they're looking to accomplish, whether it's in their life or internally.
Right, right. And I think what happens is you just listening, you're holding that space for them. And I've experienced both sides of this. And what I've always found is, if you are there holding the space, or if someone's holding the space for you, I'll play that angle first, I'll start asking questions, and then I'm answering my own questions. And the person's just sitting there nodding. And you're like, well, I'm just talking to myself here. It's like, yeah, because you already have all the answers. You just need that other person to hold that space for you and to allow you to explore it. And you go, well, why can't you do that work on your own? Well, most people don't take the time to sit and meditate long enough to have that conversation with themselves. So when they have that conversation externally and there's someone physically there listening, all they have to do is go, mm-hmm, uh-huh, mm-hmm. And you're like, yeah, the session's done. It's almost like, wow, I had the answer. But you really do need that person like yourself to help pull it out, because you're there as almost like a guide, I would assume, right? You're like, well, let's get back to that other situation about that. Maybe that's really the core thing, not this external thing that you put out there.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. One of my favorite, teachers, Bitch Nat Han, calls it compassionate listening. And this kind of compassionate listening is—it's almost a practice. It's a Buddhist practice. It's a discipline of making the other person. If you look at your experience as you go through life, through the world, what most people come to realize is that there's very little of that going on in the world. There's very little of that going on. Most people are so bogged down with their to-do lists that even when they are in a place where they are, having a conversation with someone, they're really not present. And, on some level, everybody feels that. You can pick up on that. You can pick up on, what percentage of that person's attention is really fully focused on you. So, that would be the first session, but I don't want to, it's not, whether it's fortunate or unfortunate, most of the sessions, following that actually end up being, a situation where I am probably doing as much talking during the session as the client, because there is so much, that knowledge can do for the client as well. There's often, you know, all it takes is a minor tweak in a misdirection or a piece of information that's missing for someone to, you know, realign themselves and find their way back on the GPS and navigate themselves to the goal they want to go to. So it's not every session that is about, you know, I'm definitely not one of those therapists who sit there and you know, just sort of nods and, you know, listen.
No. And don't get me wrong. I'm not taking down what you do. I do agree that I think it's the, it's fascinating to me that the person, as you said, taps into their higher self and taps into these answers that they didn't realize were there.
Yeah.
And then I said, I think you were there as a guide to sort of pull them in and go, okay, let's talk about that a little deeper. Now we're sort of really getting to the root of the matter as opposed to what we've been dancing around or what you assumed was, you know, someone could come in and go like, I don't know why I can't seem to get a job that I like. It's like, well, you know, what was your childhood like? Oh, well, I hated this and this. And okay, that's really the problem why you can't find the job that you really like because of that.
Exactly. You got it. I mean, that's perfectly right. So people do, if they are able to tap into their higher intuition, they do often find their way back to, you know, answering their own questions. But and that is how it all begins. And as we progress, there's a lot more that comes into play as then they reach levels of their own evolution as human beings where not all the questions are answered, which is what my journey to go and study with these people was always about, that where I would reach these other levels where it's a terrain that has not, you know, it's a terrain I'm not familiar with. And so I would need to go and, you know, be taught what that terrain's rules and regulations and, you know, what are the universal laws that govern this new vibration level, if you would, you know, to use the verbiage of New Age spirituality.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that a little. We had talked a little bit about past life regressions, and is that something that you do and that you help people to see?
Yes. It's definitely something that one of the tools in the, you know, one of the many tools that I use with certain clients that really, you know, want to take that route and do that work, because it's one of the most powerful tools, actually, I should say. So I don't necessarily just jump into it with anybody, but with people who are extremely grounded and who are ready for the kind of transformative power of doing that kind of work, then it, you know, it's a very exciting sort of approach to take.
Now, is it something that, because I've listened to different studies on this and just different ways that people use it, is it sometimes associated with an ailment, like, let's say, I don't know, it could be a back pain, or it could be something that they've carried over. It could be a feeling. Does it manifest in a physical way or an emotional way or both that you found? And do you intuitively know when you need to go there? Do you know what I mean? Like someone comes in with a particular ailment and you're like, wow, you know what? I don't know how to tell you this, but yeah, you were, something physically happened to you and that's, and you've carried it over because you were stabbed in the back.
You know, right.
And, you know, like physically, like, you know, stabbed in the back. And that's why you're carrying this pain in your shoulder and it's resentment. I don't know. I'm just throwing out these ideas.
Yeah, no, you're so knowledgeable. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of somaticized pain that does trace back to past lives. Often, you know, it's these situations where you'll find somebody having these excruciating, recurrent, you know, consistent, sort of agitating pains, but as much as they go to the doctor, no one can find out what's wrong with them, you know? So it's these bizarre things. And yes, in cases like that, then I always recommend doing a past life regression, because often just the opening of that porthole to the past and knowledge of what has happened and what you've carried forward with you releases the tie to it, which is the most interesting part of this work for me. It's how consciousness actually is enough to remove, you know, somatized pain. It's an amazing thing. And there's no more than that that needs to happen often
really?
Than just the knowledge of it. Yes.
So
yes.
Just acknowledging that this happened to you and now you go, oh, okay. And it's like you're saying that almost is enough to resolve it and go, okay, you don't need to carry that over with you, or you can release that now. You've brought it over, but you don't need to carry it any longer.
Yeah, it's actually not an intellectual process. It's although that is exactly what happens, just as you've described it, it actually is more of an energetic process, because what happens is that as a person decides that they want to do this work, literally what is happening is that you are opening a gateway to a memory of a soul memory of the past that has been closed up to now. So it's like if a person just regresses or sees a picture, for example, of their childhood in this life. Often, once you see that picture, suddenly you've opened a gateway to that occasion, and suddenly you don't just remember when, you know, you were 4 years old and you blew out the candles on that cake. Once you've seen that picture, other aspects of that memory come flooding in. You remember kind of the feeling that you had at that point. You remember who was there. There's other stuff that comes rushing in, and that's kind of the same thing that happens when you do a past life regression. It's like you've gone and you have stimulated the neurons and the synaptic pathways that hold the memories, but that haven't been opened or utilized. And by opening that pathway again, by stimulating that pathway so that it's once again neurons firing and memories flooding in, you know, all of the stuff that needs to be known comes in, so that from an energetic level, it's like you've removed the dam in the river, you know, that's been
sure.
keeping the two sides of the river, right? So then it's flowing again. It's almost like Chinese medicine acupuncture, where you're dealing with the energy meridians of the body, and the needles go exactly in the place that removes the blockages. And once those blockages are removed, then suddenly you're rebalancing in a way where you're not doing anything other than going to the acupuncturist, right?
Right, right. So let me ask you this then. So when someone acknowledges that, or if you say, hey, listen, I really think this might be a past life regression type treatment, which would work best, do you already intuitively know what year it was or what age they were before the regression starts? Do you already say, okay, you're a Native American, you're in the field, you're a Plains Indian, you know, and do you start seeing it first?
Rarely. So it has happened that I will, you know, be in a place with someone where we, without even realizing it, we have created sacred space within the confines of the conversation that we're having, and I will, you know, unconsciously slip into an altered state, which is, you know, that state of theta, which allows a person to access those, you know, synaptic pathways, and then I will connect with the person energetically, and without even trying to, we'll see their past lives, and things will come to me. So that is, you know, that's happened, and that is a natural occurrence. However, I've worked so hard on, you know, learning how to sort of control that knob. I refer to it as like, it's like a light dimmer, right? So the ability to turn up the light, the ability to turn down the light, because growing up, having these you know, intuitive capacity was very difficult. I couldn't be on a public bus. I couldn't be in a room, you know, crowded room full of people. It was just very hard to control how much information I was consistently receiving from other people. And so I worked very hard to hone the skills of closing that down unless I, you know, created sacred space and chose to open it for the purposes of helping or healing someone.
Right. So you've already, I mean, you've had this since you were little. Do you remember what year, how old you were when you first realized you had a gift?
Oh, I mean, I was born with it, and I just, the things I remember are, you know, being this just naturally, you know, just having this naturally, and what I remember most is people's reactions to me, which created the scenario that I talked about earlier in terms of my learning that this was not an okay thing to be right out with in the world. You know,
yeah,
you have to, like, you know, even now, this is probably my first public, you know, open, truly open conversation about these gifts that I have. So it's, you know, it's a big deal for me to do that, because I've worked so hard in my life to have the, you know, the worldly sort of education and to distance myself from anything that is, you know,
spiritual,
quacky, or, yeah, well, you know, not spiritual per se, but not to, you know, people still, as much as the world secretly appreciates, you know, extrasensory perception, it's still sort of something that is growing on the sidelines. And there are a lot of people in the world who are associated as, you know, kooks and quacks and whatnot, you know, when they start talking about this stuff, that, you know, as a psychologist, of course, I'm very cautious not to jump into being open about this,
absolutely,
this part of my life, right?
Absolutely. Listen, I 1,000% understand, and I'm thrilled that I can have this conversation with you and be able to air it, because it is something that is very sensitive, and some people get it and some people don't get it, and it's okay.
Right.
Like, I look at it now and I continually change my perception of going, do we talk about that? Do we not talk about that? And I remember you and I actually had that conversation at the meeting where there's certain people that you can say anything to and they accept you for who you are. And then there's other people where you have to wear that mask because you don't want them to think the weird thing about you. And it's only because it's their perception of what that means. You're like, their perception might be, oh, I knew someone who did that and she was a gypsy. And she,
right,
looked into a crystal ball. I'm like, yeah, that's Hollywood's version of it. You're like, it's, you know, it's not.
Right.
And it's not Whoopi,
exactly,
Goldberg either. In Ghosts. So, you know, it's those things that those people, that's the only way they've ever been exposed to it. You're like, oh, you're like Whoopi Goldberg. And you're like, no, not really. I'm not going to do pottery and clay with you.
Exactly. So you can imagine how impressed and, you know, amazing I really thought you and your wife, Janie, or to feel safe enough to, you know, sort of come out on air with you guys as you know, the first step out there publicly. So
I think it's fantastic.
That goes back to you.
I think it's fantastic, and I'm very excited that you are using our platform to let people know, because I think this is stuff that is going to become more and more mainstream, because we are moving, we're shifting. Everyone's shifting, mm-hmm, and I think that science and medicine is going to start referring back more to this, because it is becoming more practical. You know, I know,
absolutely,
I would much rather go to someone like yourself 1,000% than just a doctor, because a doctor, mm-hmm, has just studied his own cases and just studied manuals and books of, well, this is what usually happens, you know, but there is no gut feeling. He's strictly working from a book. I'd rather go to someone who goes, here's my gut feeling. Oh, and by the way, I can back it up by these statistics. To me, that just feels more well-rounded, you know?
Right, right. It's amazing. I mean, it's amazing because even the government, you know, the secret agencies of the government use in you know, people who are considered psychics or intuitives to help them resolve issues or solve problems that they feel their modern quantum physics is not caught up to help them solve. Yet the medical field is still separating, you know, and keeping a very firm differentiation between alternative medicine and traditional medicine. I just find that really very interesting.
I find that that's just simply greed, and that they want to, you know, it's like, here's the natural plant. Well, let's extract everything from the natural plant, and then we can charge $750 a pill for it.
You know? Exactly. Like, yeah, okay. Exactly. Exactly.
What would you say are the common people that come and see you? Like, what are the common type of, if there is a common type of person,
yeah.
Do they come to you because they're frustrated with their relationship, or they're frustrated with their job, or they just want to be enlightened? I mean, just give me some scenarios. Who might
sure.
want to come and see you?
Sure. So I have you know, I do see, you know, anyone and everyone. But I think that because my expertise from a educational standpoint is in two particular areas. I have a master's in marriage and family therapy, so I do a lot of couples work, a lot of premarital work, marriage work, and also like mediation work with couples who are wanting to get divorced but don't want to, you know, basically throw the baby out with the bathwater. So they come for mediation so that they can separate amicably or find a way of staying together. So that's the relationship stuff is a big area, but also I see a lot of relatively evolved seekers. So you'll have people who've done quite a bit of work on their own, and they have reached a point where they understand. Anybody who's a seeker knows that you can't climb all the rungs of the ladder solo. You know, you always need a guide, a master, a person, a guru, you know, whatever you want to call it, to sort of help you navigate the next rung and the terrain that you're coming to. And so there's a lot of that kind of work. And then I have just really traditional therapeutic clients who come in for, you know, anxiety or, you know, minor depression or parenting stuff. I have a lot of clients who come in who are having issues transitioning with the various ages of their children, and so they're looking for a little bit more parent coaching type of stuff. So, you know, it's the gamut. You name it. You name the gamut. Of course, my favorite type of work is the kind of work that is inclusive of all of that, where, you know, we are doing spiritual stuff, but we're utilizing the spiritual stuff to help, you know, apply it to their everyday life in order to evolve them. And so they're kind of spreading their light. They're taking the stuff that they're getting from our sessions together, and they're going out into the world and being light bearers and, you know, sort of transforming other people's lives with that. So, you name it. It's just the full gamut.
No, definitely. You definitely have touched upon quite a bit. And it's really interesting. I want to go back to what you had said about people that are going through a divorce and they come and see you while the divorce is happening, or at least they're considering divorce and they don't want it to get messy, because it can get really ugly and can really just be a lot of strain on each person that has to go through it. So that's really interesting that they use you to just sort of say, hey, listen, you know, that we need to separate certain things. And that's a really interesting concept, because I never knew something like that existed, you know?
Yeah.
Where you can go see a counselor, and a counselor's like, look, you both bought a house together. There's X amount of things that have to get split up. And it's like particular things. And sometimes people just, you know, their hurts are like, no, I'm keeping the lamp. You're like, who cares about the lamp? I heard a story once of a guy. There was a particular toaster oven. It was something frivolous like that. And it cost a couple, an additional like $500,000, because neither one of them wanted to give up on it. And they went back and forth, and one guy finally wins it, and he goes, do you like your toaster? And he goes, what toaster? He goes, the $500,000 one. He goes, it took you guys a year just to go back and forth on that one stupid thing.
Right.
You know,
right,
so,
exactly. Yeah. That's the reason why, you know, the mediation work is so important, because not only that's a perfect example. Not only does it just, you know, drain the pocketbook, but, you know, it drains the life force out of the couple's potentiality for their next relationship, as well as, you know, often there's kids involved. So you can only imagine what this does to the children, you know, when things are just drawn out and the two adults involved are so caught up in their hurt and grief that they can't sort of stick their head out of the clouds momentarily to see the ripple effect, you know, the negative ripple effect of not doing it amicably.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Now, as you do these things, do you usually, I'm noticing here that you either have a one-on-one session, you do telephone sessions, and you do online sessions mm-hmm. also. So can people just call you on the phone and have a session, or do they, you know, do you have an office also?
Yeah. I've got an office in Beverly Hills that I can see clients in, but most of my work is done on the phone and online, because I've got clients all over the world. I've got, you know, it seems like every time I'm invited to go for a talk somewhere, or I'm doing marketing for the book that I'm, you know, working on getting, you know, published and released in the next year, I pick up, you know, some kind of client who is, you know, drawn to this soul work. So, and often the phone sessions are even more impactful than even the in-person sessions, because I have already, you know, I'm in my home office. I've the sacred space that I need has been created. I'm surrounded by all my holy objects and, you know, things that sort of help elevate the energy even further. And the focus is pure and true rather than any kind of, you know, visual distraction. So I do all three of those things, and they are all highly impactful.
That's awesome. See, that's very awesome that people can actually get sessions and not necessarily have to live in the country or live in the state or, you know, be able to get to Beverly Hills.
Right.
Let's step back a second, and I want to know a little bit more about the book that you're writing. Is this your first book that you're taking on?
Yes, it is. It is the first book that I'm actually looking to publish. I've written quite a few books, but have just, you know, not been, they've been more for me and my, you know, sort of personal journals and growth process than something that I felt was really coming through me that I wanted to share with the world. And so it's a series of books, and it does talk about my travels and you know, adventures within those travels, internally as well as externally. So it helps define the journey, you know, of the soul, so to speak, and it begins to display and talk about the characteristics of the various terrains that, you know, most people experience as they're evolving. And my hope is that it kind of sheds a light and creates a blueprint for people where it doesn't feel as like so much of an isolating process, which I believe that for most people it does. It feels the whole evolution of the spirit and of the soul feels like a tremendously isolated process, because, you know, we grow up with people in schools, you know, psychologically, educationally, we're surrounded by people, we're hitting similar and expected developmental, you know, stages that we all share in common, but there's very few models, spiritual models, in the world. I shouldn't call it spiritual, I should call it more of a consciousness expansion model, because it doesn't really have that much to do with any kind of religion. It has more to do with the growth of the human spirit and the various rungs that you will hit and what that terrain looks like, so that it doesn't feel so much like someone's, you know, losing their mind or having a nervous breakdown or all these cliches, like the midlife crisis is often a midlife breakthrough, as you know, Jeff Brown refers to it. You know, it's not so much a breakdown. And so I feel like that is my calling more than anything else, is, you know, I've kind of been through this path in a way that seems to be relatively unique, and I felt the dark nights of the soul, and I felt the isolation, and I just got to a point in my life where I thought, you know, it's so unnecessary, because in the eastern part of the world, for example, where religion and spirit, you know, and state are not separated, it doesn't filter down into the, like it does in the West, where religion and state are separated. It filters down into the subconscious of the human being, where they themselves separate their spirit from every other aspect of their life. So it leaves a schism and an isolated sense, whereas in the East, because spirituality is integrated into every part of their life, then their growth spectrum and the terrain that they hit on every rung of the ladder that they climb up is also shared.
That's very interesting. So your book is almost like a guide for the soul that, hey, if you're hitting this so-called midlife crisis, this is usually an age, or this is usually a time when the spirit or your soul begins to evolve in this way. Is that basically where it's like a
yes it is, but it's told through my story.
Very cool. So it's more of a biography, but it's got a dual purpose.
Exactly You got it right.
Excellent Well, I want people to know how they can get a hold of you. Do you want to share that with us as far as your website and your email?
Sure. My website is MST Group. That's the MST stands for my name, Mona Shanasa Tubian. So it's mstgroup.us. And all my contact information is there as well. And my email is mona@mstgroup.us. I also have another website called evolvewithmona.com, and that also will allow you to access the different portals, online portals that I have. So either one of those ways is great. I'd love to hear from any like-minded seeker or not. It would be a pleasure and an honor.
That is awesome. I really wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to be on our show. And I wish you the best of luck on your book. I'm sure it's going to be a hit because it sounds fascinating. And your bio in itself is fascinating, just the experiences that you've had. And now to be able to share them with others, I think is awesome. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Tony. It's been just a ton of fun, and it's been an honor to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure to have such amazing guests to share with you on our show.
Yes, it is.
You know, if you're looking for a little spark on your any day, you can always go back to humanitarianradio.com and check out any of our previous shows. We do keep them on there so that we can inspire you to find some good news for your soul. Do something great for someone else in your world.
Yeah, and if you know of a story, or if you know someone that should be on our show, by all means, connect with us on Facebook at Humanitarian Radio, or go to our website, humanitarianradio.com, and reach out to us. Let us know any good news that you have out there that you want to share with the world.
Make it a good week.
We'll see you next time. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Humanitarian Radio, shouting out some good news for your soul.